Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Jenny Lester Moffitt, who is USDA's Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. She joins us to discuss the latest on the bird flu outbreak and how USDA is working to slow the spread of the virus. But first, here's this week's headlines. USDA is funding more than 700 clean energy projects through the Rural Energy for America and Higher Blends Infrastructure Incentive programs. The agency is providing more than $194 million in funding through the REAP program, which provides loans and grants for wind, solar, and energy efficiency projects. Meanwhile, USDA's new school meal standards cut down on both sugar and sodium. Cuts to sugars will start next fall and will be fully implemented by 2027. Added sugars will be limited to 10% of each week's school meals menu. The new rule would cut sodium in breakfast by 10% and 15% for lunch. Schools must comply by fall of 2027. The goal was to try and get a 30% reduction for sodium, but Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says that didn't happen because of a congressional directive in one of this year's appropriations bills. And finally, the agency is trying to figure out how the most recent strain of the bird flu is spreading within and to other dairy cattle herds. USDA issued an order this week mandating the testing of lactating dairy cattle that are scheduled to move from one state to another. In order to be moved, they will first have to be tested for the presence of the H5N1 virus. If testing shows a cow carries the virus, then a 30-day waiting period will be imposed. Cows can be moved following a subsequent negative test for the virus. The virus has been detected in herds in at least 8 states. 4 states detected bird flu in dairy operations after they got cows from Texas, which was one of the first states to report an infection. The department is trying to figure out if the disease is spreading due to contact with birds or other animals infected with the virus or through contaminated milking machines. However, no one knows what's currently causing the spread. This comes as FDA says it found remnants of the virus in some samples of pasteurized milk. However, the agency says milk is still safe to drink. USDA Undersecretary Jenny Lester Moffitt says USDA is working to limit the spread of the bird flu and taking steps to be proactive.
At the end of March, on March 22nd, our national lab had the first confirmation of highly pathogenic avian influenza, H5N1, in dairy cattle in 4 herds, and 2 in Kansas and 2 in Texas. What we understand from this is we understand that the genomic sequencing from those herds matches the genomic sequencing of wild birds that have been known to be and migrating birds that have been in that area for over the winter. We also know that at this point now, we have 33 herds across 8 states that have tested positive for highly pathogenic avian influenza, the same genomic sequencing. A lot of this, what we understand is the transmissibility between cattle. We understand that because of cattle movements from herds in the Texas Panhandle region to other areas of the country have caused the spread of this virus into those other states as well.
So USDA announced this week mandatory testing is going to be required for lactating dairy cattle as they be moved from state to state. You know, how will this help slow the spread of the bird flu?
This is an evolving situation. This is our first detection that we have had of the bird flu of highly pathogenic avian influenza in dairy cattle. So we're 4 weeks into this. We're learning more as we go, but we've so far gathered about 2,000 tests of dairy cattle and have a better understanding, but we have more to learn. As I mentioned, certainly movement of cattle, we've been able to, through our testing, understand the linkage of spreading the disease through movement of cattle. So the announcement that we had this week, the federal order that has two main primary components to it. First is the mandatory testing of cattle, of dairy cattle, before movement across state lines. And then the second is mandatory reporting of positive test results by any lab for livestock that have highly pathogenic avian influenza. Those two things together will give us and paint a better picture for us to be able to understand what's happening, gathering that data, gathering that understanding, but also limiting the spread through really important things like pre-movement testing so that we know and there's a negative confirmation of dairy cattle before they move to other states. Again, that will limit the spread and reduce the spread of the virus throughout the dairy herds across the nation.
So when the bird flu hit the poultry industry a few years ago, we saw egg prices skyrocket. Do you think that could happen again? And do you think that that could translate over into dairy products?
Well, that's a good question and something we are closely monitoring every day across our team at USDA, evaluating and understanding what's happening. One thing that that the FDA, this has been a, first off, I'll say, this has been a whole of government approach. So this is a very unique situation and where we have what we call a One Health approach, but this is also, this is a virus that is currently in animals. We did have one human test positive, one dairy worker in Texas test positive a few weeks ago. But this also, as you talked about, is our food supply chain and our dairy supply chain. And so we're monitoring prices very closely. We're monitoring supply very closely. We know the impact and the significance of this. But what the FDA has analyzed so far is that that the pasteurization rules that have been in effect for over 100 years continue to protect the safety of milk throughout for consumers.
We'll be right back with more from Undersecretary Moffitt right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service announced a final rule on animal disease traceability regulations, requiring official ear tags on cattle and bison to be visually and electronically readable when moved from state to state. Undersecretary Moffitt says this new rule will help provide clarity.
APHIS is announcing the Animal Disease Traceability Rule. This is a rule that has been over a decade in the making. APHIS is committed to ensuring that these industries and the U.S. economy continue to thrive by enhancing our ability to protect them from and swiftly respond to serious foreign animal diseases. This is very important for a number of different reasons. First off, this is important for cattle producers to be able to understand and to minimize the effect and the impact both within the industry for their own cattle health, but also for trade impacts. So this is critical for a number of different reasons. Hannah, you asked about how we plan on implementing this. These will now require official ear tags to be visibly and electronically readable for interstate movement of certain cattle and bison. And that's a really important piece. So it is only for a limited section of the industry. It's again about protecting livestock health. It's again about protecting and maintaining producers' livelihoods in the U.S. economy. It's also about making sure that that we are able to act swiftly if there is a foreign animal disease, to be able to regionalize and to contain the work in which we're doing, because we will know where those cattle have been. We will know where those bison have been, and we'll be able to swiftly take action.
So some of the opposition surrounding this topic has focused on the error rate for the tags and that the tags can easily fall off. How is USDA working to address these concerns?
Yeah, so for quite some time now, USDA has been collaborating with stakeholders, working on how we implement this, of course, and then also making sure that we've got good technology. So, right, both the ear tags as well as the readers and all of that is really a very important piece. APHIS has been and will continue to provide ear tags for producers to help offset some of the costs of implementing this rule as well.
Is USDA seeing any results from its crackdown on competition practices? And if so, can you explain what some of those results are?
We have put out two important rules, and we have two more that are forthcoming. But two final rules are already in effect and are being implemented. The transparency and poultry grower contracting and tournaments, as well as the inclusive competition and market integrity under the Packers and Stockyards Act, which clearly establishes what are practices that are discrimination, retaliation, and deception in the industry for contracting. We'll have two more rules that are forthcoming. These will be draft rules that will be forthcoming. But importantly is our work, not just implementing the rules and making sure the rules are implemented effectively, but also partnering with partners like the Department of Justice. So we have a farmerfairness.org portal where farmers have been able to file complaints where they feel that they have been treated unfairly in anti-competitive practices. We've received several complaints that we are working in partnership with the Department of Justice to pursue at this point.
Undersecretary Moffitt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Hannah.
We'll be right back with this week's panel discussion. But first, our Andrew Hunneke takes a look at consumer food choices in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Data from the most recent Gardner Food and Agricultural Policy Survey shows what Americans think about food and agricultural issues. The survey asked people about the places or people they think are charging too much for food, as well as the quality of products that are sold from different sized food companies. This first chart shows the different pieces of the food system and if people think they are overcharging for products. More than 72% of respondents believe food manufacturers, grocery stores, and restaurants are overcharging. Only 21% felt the same way for farmers. This next chart looks at who American consumers believe are better at producing the food we eat, and the results are mixed. People thought smaller food companies are better at producing sustainable food, whereas larger companies are better at producing affordable food. People thought food companies of both sizes are best at producing safe and accessible food. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe on agripulse.com or on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are excited to get into our panel discussion today. Joined this week by Michael Dykes with the International Dairy Foods Association and Fred Gingrich with the American Association of Bovine Practitioners. And Fred, my first question is to you. You know, the bird flu has been around for many years and it has impacted the industry, very much so on the poultry side. But this is the first that we have seen the virus be detected in dairy cattle. You know, walk us through what we know about the virus so far.
Well, what we do know is that the initial reports were in the Texas Panhandle, where the virus apparently jumped from birds into dairy cattle. That is the first time, as you said, that the virus has been detected in cattle. So that's a concern, but that's what influenza viruses are notorious for doing. It is the same virus that affects birds. Currently, there's about 30 premises in 8 states that are affected. The good news is that it doesn't act like it does in birds and cattle. It affects about 10 to 15% of the animals. They have a decrease in milk production without deaths. So we're thankful for that. Some of the concerns are that it appears to be spreading now from cow to cow, which is a concern. And then the other thing that we know now is that although the virus appears to concentrate in the milk of cows, pasteurization inactivates the virus, so we can be confident that consuming pasteurized dairy products remains safe.
And Fred, continuing on with that, you know, USDA announced this week mandatory testing is required for lactating dairy cattle when they are to be moved from state to state. You know, walk us through how these transportation restrictions will impact the cattle industry.
So we do have, AABP does have concerns about the mandatory testing requirements that USDA released yesterday, but we are prepared to assist our members with complying with those guidelines from USDA. But essentially what the USDA is trying to do is get a better handle on what herds are impacted and try to minimize the spread. If there is cow-to-cow transmission, and we don't know how that is occurring exactly, we want to get ahead of the disease by tracking and making sure that cows, lactating dairy cows, that are moving from a farm across state lines have some type of assurance that they're not carrying this virus. And so that's the overall goal of USDA, which we do support. We do have some concerns if there's going to be testing and reporting requirements for dairy cattle, lactating dairy cow moving into slaughter establishments across state lines. We hope that both veterinarians and laboratories are able to handle the increased capacity with this testing. And so those are some of our concerns.
And Michael, bringing you into the conversation here, you know, the FDA says it did find remnants of the virus in some samples of pasteurized milk. Are you concerned at all that consumers could start to worry about the safety of drinking milk?
You know, I think there's many things about this that we don't know, as Fred just said. But there's one thing we do know, and we do know that pasteurization inactivates this virus and that the milk and dairy products are safe to consume. We are urging the federal government to work expeditiously to continue their research on this. But everything we know about this virus historically, with the type of virus that it is, it's heat sensitive, and the effectiveness of the pasteurized milk ordinance and pasteurization renders milk and dairy products safe to consume. So that's the one thing we do know, Hannah, going into this.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Register now for the 2024 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. This summit takes place on June 4th in Sacramento and through our virtual experience. See the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back. Our panel discussion continues with the International Dairy Foods Association's Michael Dykes discussing the impact the bird flu will have on the dairy market.
Let's be clear about what we have seen thus far, and I appreciate the work of Fred and the American Association of Bovine Practitioners, having been a former member of the AABP. This is a disease that it's an economic disease for dairy. It goes through the herd in about 8 to 10 days. We see some of the cows, the later lactation cows, that are affected. We have seen no change in milk supply. We've seen no change in the export markets. We've seen no change in the prices of milk, and the milk continues to be safe. So from that standpoint, it is a disease that our dairy farmers are managing, and we need the federal government to continue complete their work to continue to reassure the consuming public that it's safe. But that's kind of what we know about the disease so far. One person on one herd working directly with the dairy cows so far has had a mild respiratory conjunctivitis and tested positive. So that's the extent of what we have on this disease today. So I think that's the main point we got to keep putting forward. Milk and dairy products are safe, and we've not seen a change in prices, demand, supply, exports, any of those things.
So on another issue, you know, USDA announced this week limits for added sugars in school meals, which will impact flavored milk. I want to just get your thoughts. Do you think USDA got these restrictions right?
I want to commend USDA for what they did. I also want to commend 37 milk processors that joined with International Dairy Foods Association. When we saw this issue and the proposed rule to eliminate flavored milk from schools, we said at IDFA, our industry cannot afford to give this up. And it's the most nutritious part of the meal program for students is the breakfast and lunch at school. And milk is a nutritious product. We need to be proactive. We said we would commit to a maximum of 10 grams of added sugar by the 2025 school year. We are well below that today. On average, we're about 7.5-8 grams of added sugar. We think they got it right on milk and added sugars in milk. We also think they got it right on sodium levels in cheese. It's also a part of school meals.
And Fred, you know, given the impact the bird flu has had, you know, why hasn't USDA sped up the approval process of some of the vaccines that would prevent the bird flu that are currently in development?
Well, I think right now there's some other things that we need to find out first, Hannah. I think the biggest one right now is developing validated surveillance screening tests. That is incredibly important, especially if we could develop a bulk tank test to screen herds as being non-infected. I think another thing that would be a little more critical is for us to work through the epidemiology of this disease on dairy farms so we can get a better understanding of how it's spread. And until we know that, certainly a vaccine may be premature at this point. AABP does support the use of vaccines to prevent disease, and I am hopeful that we will have a vaccine that would prevent the spread of this disease and or mitigate the clinical signs, in other words, the milk drop that's associated with it. But we do support the approval process to make sure that it is safe and effective.
Well, Fred, Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke discusses the latest CRP acre enrollment in this week's Map It Out.
The Conservation Reserve Program is one of the largest private lands conservation efforts in the country. Farmers and landowners voluntarily agree to pull environmentally sensitive land from agricultural production in exchange for a payment from the government. This map shows USDA's most recent data from December for acres of land enrolled in CRP across the country. Nearly 24.8 million acres were enrolled in the program. Colorado leads the way with nearly 2.8 million acres. Nebraska, South Dakota, and Texas all had more than 2 million acres enrolled, while North Dakota, New Mexico, Iowa, and Kansas all had more than 1 million. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House Appropriations Committee will hold a hearing Tuesday on the fiscal year 2025 budget request for the EPA. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative will hold a public hearing Thursday on promoting trade resilience. And finally, USDA's monthly agricultural prices report comes out Tuesday. I will also be taking part in the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's Washington Watch Conference, which takes place Monday through Wednesday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.